Dangereuse by Christopher Hampton. From the novel by Chaudelet de Laclos. With Kieran Hines as Valmont, Lindsay Duncan as Madame de Merthey, and Emma Fielding as Madame de Tourvel. It's a warm evening in August 1785. We're in the principal salon in the Paris house of Madame la Marquise de Merthey. The Marquise, a respectable widow of considerable means, is playing piquet with her cousin Madame de Volange, who is herself a widow. Sitting next to Madame de Volange, watching her play and politely stifling the occasional yawn, is her daughter Cécile, a slim and attractive girl of 15. Madame de Merthey interrupts the game to examine Cécile with some care.
Well, my dear. Oh, so you've left the convent for good.
Oh, yes, madame.
And how are you adapting to the outside world?
Very well, I think. I'm so excited to have my own bedroom and dressing room.
I've advised her to watch and learn and be quiet except when spoken to. She's very naturally still prone to confusion. Yesterday, she was under the impression my shoemaker had come for dinner.
It was when he fell to his knees and caught hold of my foot. It startled me.
I actually thought he was attempting to propose marriage. Never mind, my dear. You'll soon get used to it. We must see what we can devise for your amusement.
Madame,
oh, very well. Show him up.
Madame.
Valmont is here.
You receive him, do you?
Yes.
So do you.
I thought perhaps it was under the circumstances.
Under what circumstances?
I don't believe I have any grounds for self-reproach.
On the contrary, as far as I know, you're virtually unique in that respect.
And of course, if I had, he would no longer be calling on me.
Le Vicomte de Valmont. Madame.
Vicomte. What a pleasant surprise.
How delightful to see you, Madame de Valmont.
You remember my daughter, Cécile.
Well, indeed, but who could have foretold she would flower so gracefully? I wanted to call on you before leaving the city.
Oh, I'm not sure we can allow that. Why should you want to leave?
Paris in August, you know. And it's time I paid a visit on my old aunt. I've neglected her disgracefully.
I approve of your aunt. She takes such an intelligent interest in the young. She's been able to maintain a kind of youthfulness of her own. All the same,
will you please give Madame de Rosemonde our warmest regards? She's been good enough to invite us to stay at the chateau, and I hope perhaps later in the season...
I shall make a point of it, madame. But, please, don't let me interrupt your game.
I think I may have lost enough for this evening.
Your daughter evidently finds our conversation intriguing.
Wake up, Cecile.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think it's time we took you home. Come along.
I'm used to being asleep by 9 at the convent.
So I should hope. Ladies.
My dear. Good night.
Good night.
Your aunt.
That's right.
Whatever for? I thought she'd already made arrangements to leave you all her money.
She has, but there are other considerations, family obligations, that kind of thing.
Do you know why I summoned you here this evening?
I hoped it might be for the pleasure of my company.
I need you to carry out a heroic enterprise. Something for your memoirs.
I don't know when I should ever find the time to write my memoirs.
Then I'll write them. You remember when Gercourt left me?
Yes.
And went off with that fat mistress of yours, whose name escapes me?
Yes, yes.
No one has ever done that to me before. Or to you, I imagine.
Well, I was quite relieved to be rid of her, frankly.
No, you weren't. One of Gercourt's more crass and boring topics of conversation was what exactly he would look for in a wife. What qualities when the moment came for him, as he put it, to settle down?
Yes.
He had a ludicrous theory that blondes were inherently more modest and respectable than any other species of girl. And he was also unshakably prejudiced in favour of convent education. And now he's found the ideal candidate.
Cécile Volange?
Very good.
And her 60,000 a year, that must have played some part in the calculations.
I tell you, if she were an uncloistered brunette, she could be worth twice that and he wouldn't go near her. His priority, you see, is a guaranteed virtue.
I wonder if I'm beginning to guess what it is you're intending to propose.
Gercourt is with his regiment in Corsica until October. That should give you plenty of time.
You mean to...
She's a rosebud.
You think so?
And he'd get back from honeymoon to find himself the laughing stock of Paris.
Well...
Yes, love and revenge. Two of your favourites.
No, I can't.
What?
Well, you know how difficult I find it to disobey your orders, but really, I can't.
Why not?
It's too easy. It is. What is she? 15? She's seen nothing. She knows nothing. She's bound to be curious. She'd be on her back before you'd unwrap the first bunch of flowers. Any one of a dozen men could manage it. I have my reputation to think of.
I think you underestimate her. She's very pretty. And she has a rather promising air of languor.
You mean she falls asleep a lot? Well, perhaps your Belle Roche is the man for her.
Belle Roche is an idealist.
Oh, bad luck. I knew there was something the matter with him.
There is someone who's already fallen for her. Young Danceny. He goes round to sing duets with her.
Oh, and you think he'd like to try a little close harmony?
Yes. But he's as timid and inexperienced as she is. We couldn't rely on him. So you see, it'll just have to be you.
I hate to disappoint you.
I think you really are going to refuse me. Aren't you?
I can see I'm going to have to tell you everything.
Of course you are.
Yes. Well, my trip to the country to visit my more or less immortal aunt, the fact of the matter is that it's the first step towards the most ambitious plan I've ever undertaken.
Well, go on.
You see, my aunt is not on her own just at the moment. She has a young friend staying with her, Madame de Tourvel.
Yes.
She is my plan.
You can't mean it.
Why not? To seduce a woman famous for strict morals, religious fervor, and the happiness of her marriage, what could possibly be more prestigious?
I think there's something very degrading about having a husband for a rival. It's humiliating if you fail, and commonplace if you succeed. Where is he, anyway?
He's presiding over some labyrinthine case in Burgundy, which I'm allowed to inform will drag on for months.
I can't believe this. Apart from anything else, she's such a front. Bodies up to her ears, in case you might catch a glimpse of a square inch of flesh.
Yeah, you're right. Clothes don't suit her.
How old is she?
22.
And she's been married?
2 years.
Even if you succeed, you know what?
What?
All you'll get from her is what she gives her husband. I don't think you can hope for any actual pleasure. They never let themselves go, these people. If you ever make her heart beat faster, it won't be love. It'll be fear. I sometimes wonder about you, Vicomte. How could you make such a fool of yourself over a complete non-entity?
Take care now. You're speaking of the woman I...
Yes?
I've set my heart on. I haven't felt so strongly about anything since you and I were together.
And you're going to pass up this wonderful opportunity for revenge?
If I have to.
You don't have to. I won't tell anyone about this bizarre aberration of yours.
I think you'll have to wait at least until I've had her before I can allow you to insult her. And I can't agree with your theory about pleasure. You see, I have no intention of breaking down her prejudices. I want her to believe in God and virtue and the sanctity of marriage and still not be able to stop herself. I want passion, in other words. Not the kind we're used to, which is as cold as superficial. I don't get much pleasure out of that anymore. No, I want the excitement of watching her betray everything that's most important to her. Surely you understand that. I thought betrayal was your favourite word.
No, no. Cruelty. I always think that has a nobler ring to it.
You're terrible. You're 100 times worse than I'll ever be. Since we started this mission, you've made many more converts than I have. You make me feel like an amateur.
And so you are. Really, you might just as well be in love.
How is Belle Roche?
Well, he is in love. I thought it might be time to end it last week, so I tried to pick a quarrel, but he looked so woebegone, I relented. And we spent the best night we've ever had.
So you're not about to leave him?
No, I told you at the moment I'm very pleased with him.
And he's currently your only lover?
Yes.
I think you should take another. I think it most unhealthy, this exclusivity.
You're not jealous, are you?
Well, of course I am. Belroche is completely undeserving.
I thought he was one of your closest friends.
Exactly, so I know what I'm talking about. No, I think you should organize an infidelity. With me, for example.
But we decided it was far more important to preserve our friendship and to be able to trust each other implicitly.
Are you sure that wasn't just a device to heighten our pleasure?
You refuse to grant me a simple favor and then you expect to be indulged?
It's only because it is so simple. It wouldn't feel like a conquest. I have to follow my destiny, you see. I have to be true to my profession.
Well, in that case, come back when you have succeeded with Madame de Tourvel.
Yes?
And I will offer you a reward.
My love.
But I shall require proof.
Certainly.
Written proof.
Ah.
Not negotiable.
And I'm sure you'll find someone to help you out with the little Volange.
She's so lovely. If my morals were less austere, I'd take it on myself.
You're an astonishing woman.
Thank you.
I'm only sorry you haven't sufficient confidence in me to give me my reward in advance.
Good night, Vicomte.
Madame.
Later, a warm summer evening in the garden of Madame de Rosemont's chateau in the country. Raymond is strolling through the grounds with Azelin, his valet de chambre, a dapper young man resplendent in the livery of a chasseur.
So he grasped what was going on, did he?
Oh, yes, sir. I was watching him, and he was watching you.
I must say, the family was very well chosen.
Thank you, sir.
Solidly respectable, gratifyingly tearful, no suspiciously pretty girls. Well done.
I do my best for you, sir.
And not even unduly expensive. 56 livres to save an entire family from ruin. That seems a genuine bargain.
These days, my lord, you can find half a dozen like that in any village in the country.
Really? I must say, it's no longer a mystery to me why people fall so easily into the habit of charitable enterprises. All that humble gratitude... It was most effective. It
certainly brought a tear to my eye, sir.
How are you getting on with the maid?
But Julie, well, to tell you the truth, it's been a bit boring. If I wasn't so anxious to keep your lordship abreast, I think I'd have only bothered the once. I'm not sure she doesn't feel the same, but, you know, what else is there to do in the country?
Yes, it wasn't so much the details of your intimacy I was after. It was whether she's agreed to bring me Madame de Tourvel's letters. And do you think she'll keep her mouth shut?
She won't steal the letters, sir.
She won't.
You know better than me, sir. It's easy enough making them do what they want to do. It's trying to get them to do what you want them to do. That's what gives you a headache.
Mm. And them, as often as not. Where do you and Julie meet?
Oh, in my room, sir.
And is she coming tonight?
Afraid so.
Then I think I may have to burst in on you, see if blackmail will succeed better than bribery. About 2 o'clock, suit you? I don't want to embarrass you. Will that give you enough time?
Ample, sir.
Good.
Then you won't have to pay her, sir, will you?
Well, I think if she delivers, we can afford to be generous, don't you?
It's your money, sir.
Don't worry, I shan't overlook your contribution.
Well, that's very decent of you, sir.
Off you go, then. See you at 2.
All right, sir. I'll be sure to arrange her so she can't say she's there to borrow a clothes brush.
There he is. I told you he would be here.
Ladies.
And Madame de Tourvel has some mystery to reveal to us.
To you, madame, to you.
Oh, well, then, perhaps I should leave you.
No, no. It concerns you as well. I mean... It particularly concerns you.
Who?
In fact, I must begin by asking you some questions.
Very well. Just let me help my aunt to this chair.
Oh, thank you, Lord. Thank you, dear.
Now.
Where did you go this morning, monsieur?
Well, as you know, I was up early to go hunting.
And did you succeed in making a kill this time?
No, I've had the most wretched luck ever since I arrived here. Also, I'm a terrible shot.
But on this occasion, Monsieur le Vicomte, what exactly was it you were hunting?
I'm sorry, I'm afraid I don't quite follow.
You may as well own up, monsieur. I know where you were this morning.
I think it's time somebody explained to me what's going on.
Georges, my footman, just happened to be in the village earlier today.
I do hope you haven't been listening to servants' gossip.
I can see Monsieur de Valmont is determined not to tell you, so I shall have to. There's a family in the village. The man has been ill. He found himself not able to pay his taxes this year. So this morning, the bailiff arrived to seize a few sticks of furniture. Whereupon, your nephew, whose valet had been making inquiries in the village to see if anyone was suffering from particular hardship, arrived, paid off the family's debts, and added a generous contribution to help them back on their feet again.
Is this true, my dear?
Well, it's simply... Yes.
Oh, my dear boy, come and let me give you a kiss. Oh.
May I kiss you too, madame?
Oh. It's so like you to make a secret of something like that. We must visit this family in the morning, my dear, to see if we can help in any other way.
Yes, I'd like that.
Do sit down, aunt.
No, I must try to find Monsieur Le Curé. Now, I shall be up, but I do want to tell him about this before he leaves. He'd be so pleased.
I can't understand how someone whose instincts are so generous could lead such a dissolute life.
I'm afraid you have an exaggerated idea both of my generosity and of my depravity. If I knew who'd given you such a dire account of me, I might be able to defend myself. Since I don't, let me make a confession. I'm afraid the key to the paradox lies in a certain weakness of character.
I don't see how so thoughtful an act of charity could be described as weak.
This appalling reputation of mine, you see, there is some justification for it. I've spent my life surrounded by immoral people. I've allowed myself to be influenced by them, and sometimes even taken pride in outshining them. Whereas in this case, I've simply fallen under a quite opposite kind of influence. Yours.
You mean you wouldn't have done it?
Not without your example, no. It was by way of an innocent tribute to your goodness. You see how weak I am? I promised myself I was never going to tell you. It's just looking at you.
Oh,
you needn't worry. I have no illicit intentions. I wouldn't dream of insulting you. But I do love you. I adore you. Please help me. What is it?
I'm so unhappy.
But why?
Will you leave me now?
I shouldn't have said anything. I know I shouldn't. I'm sorry. But really, you have nothing to fear. Nothing at all. Tell me what to do. Show me how to behave. I'll do anything you say.
There's only one thing I would like you to do for me.
What? What is it?
But I don't see how I can ask you. I'm not even sure if I want to put myself in the position of being beholden to you.
Oh, please, no, I insist. If you're good enough to give me an opportunity to do something you want, anything, it's I who will be beholden to you.
Very well, then. I would like you to leave this house.
I don't see why that should be necessary.
Let's just say you've spent your life making it necessary.
Well, then, of course, whatever you say, I couldn't possibly refuse you. Will you allow me to give my aunt, say, 24 hours notice?
Well, yes, naturally.
I shall find something in my mail tomorrow morning which obliges me to return at once to Paris.
Thank you. I'd be very grateful.
And perhaps I might be so bold as to ask a favour in return.
Oh, monsieur.
I think it would only be just to let me know which of your friends has blackened my name.
You know very well that's impossible, monsieur. If friends of mine have warned me against you, they've done so purely in my own interest, and I could hardly reward them with betrayal, could I? I must say you do value your generous offer if you want to use it as a bargaining point.
Very well, I withdraw the request. I hope you won't think I'm bargaining if I ask you to let me write to you.
Well,
and hope that you will do me the kindness of answering my letters.
I'm not sure a correspondence with you is something a woman of honour could permit herself.
So you're determined to refuse all my suggestions, however respectable.
I didn't say that.
I really don't see how you could possibly be harmed by conceding me this very minor, but as far as I'm concerned, vitally important consolation.
I would welcome the chance to prove to you that what motivates me in this is not hatred or resentment, but...
But what? Madame...
For God's sake, monsieur, please leave me alone.
I only want to say what I hardly thought it would be possible for me to say to you. Goodbye. I'll write soon.
A couple of days later, a bedroom in a house on the outskirts of Paris, which belongs to Emilie, a courtesan. She's in bed with Valmont.
I thought the Dutch were supposed to be famous for their capacity for alcohol.
Three bottles of Burgundy and a bottle of cognac would finish anybody.
How did he drink that much?
You were pouring.
I hope you're not missing him.
Don't be silly. I just don't think it was necessary to bundle him into your carriage.
Look, man in that condition, I thought it best to send him back to his house.
This is his house.
I thought it was your house.
He owns it. I just live in it. And he's to rally in France. Seems such a shame.
Oh, well, I'm sure my coachman will use his imagination.
I'm sure, since you're perfectly aware of the position and have no doubt given him explicit instructions, he won't have to.
Explicit instructions?
Yes.
I must say, Emily, I do think it's the height of bad manners to talk about some foreigner when you're in bed with me.
Oh.
I think some appropriate punishment is called for. Turn over.
Oh, all right.
Now, do you have pen and ink and writing paper?
Yes. Over there in the bureau. Why?
Patience, my dear. Patience. Now, don't move that pretty little backside of yours. My dear Madame de Tourvel, I have just come to my desk. Don't move, I said. In the middle of a stormy night, during which I have been tossed from exaltation to exhaustion and back again. I hope one day you may feel a kind of disturbance afflicting me now.
Meanwhile, please excuse me while I take steps to calm what I can only describe as a mounting excitement. We'll finish it later, shall we?
Ten days later, a September afternoon, Valmont is taking tea with La Marquise de Merteuil in her grand salon.
You know she loves you, then?
Oh, yes. I left my man there to keep an eye on things, and a hand on the maid, who's been most cooperative since I caught them in bed together. And he tells me that when my first letter arrived, she took it to her room and sat turning it over for hours, sighing and weeping. So it seems a reasonable enough conclusion. And the maid helped us to another discovery which might interest you.
Yes.
Can you guess who it was who kept writing to my beauty, warning her to steer clear of the world's vilest pervert, namely me? Your damned cousin, the Volange bitch. It's all very well for you to laugh. She sent me back at least a month.
It's not that.
She wanted me away from Madame de Tourvel. Well, now I am, and I intend to make her suffer for it. Your plan to ruin her daughter, are you making any progress? Is there anything I can do to help? I'm entirely at your disposal.
Well, as a matter of fact, my dear Vicomte, your presence here today forms part of my plan. I'm expecting Danceny here at any moment, and I want you to help me stiffen his resolve, if that's the phrase. And then I've arranged a little scene I hope you may find entertaining. Yes, I'm sure you will.
Is that all you're going to say?
Yes, I think so.
Has Danceny not been a great success?
He's been disastrous. Like most intellectuals, he's intensely stupid. Really is a most incompetent boy. Charming, but hopeless.
You'd better bring me up to date.
Well, I've become extremely thick with little Cecile. We go to my box at the opera and chatter away all evening. I'm really quite jealous of whoever's in store for her. She has a certain innate duplicity, which is going to stand her in very good stead. She has no character and no morals. She's altogether delicious.
But what's happened?
She and Danceny are head over heels in love. I arranged a meeting, but Danceny was so paralysed with chivalry, he didn't lay a finger on her. All his energies go into writing her poems of great ingenuity and minimum impact. I tried to ginger things up by telling her it was Gercourt her mother intended her to marry. She was shocked enough to discover he was a geriatric of 36. But by the time I'd finished describing him, she couldn't have hated him more if they'd been married 10 years. Then the first major setback. She told her confessor, and he took a very strong line. So she severed relations with Danceny and spent all her time praying to be able to forget him. A pleasantly self-contradictory exercise. He remained abject throughout. Afterwards, the little one said to me, "Oh, madame, I wish you were Danceny. You know, just for a moment, I wished I was."
I often wonder how you manage to invent yourself.
When I want a man, I have him. When he wants to tell, he finds he can't. That's the whole story.
And was that our story?
I wanted you before we'd even met. My self-esteem demanded it. And then when you began to pursue me, I wanted you so badly. It's the only one of my notions that's ever got the better of me. Single combat.
Thank you.
Madame Vicomte.
My dear young man, how good to see you again.
I'm so sorry to be late, madame.
Oh, nearly too late. As you know, Mademoiselle de Valence...
It gives me such pleasure to hear her name spoken, madame.
Yes, yes, yes. As I was saying, Mademoiselle de Volanges has done me the honour of making me her confidant and counsellor in this matter which concerns you both.
She could hardly have chosen more wisely.
Yes. Well, be that as it may, I felt very strongly that in this situation, which is exceedingly delicate, you too might find it beneficial to be able to confide in someone sympathetic, a person of experience. And the Vicomte de Valmont, who is known to you, as well as being an old friend of mine, and a man of unswerving discretion, seemed to me an ideal choice. And should you agree, he's very kindly consented to devote himself to your interests.
Well, perhaps it is my reputation which is causing you to hesitate. If so, I think I can assure you that a man's own mistakes are not necessarily a guide to his faculty for objective judgment.
No, of course not. I certainly wouldn't have the impudence. No, the fact is that this is not a conventional intrigue with the aim of... that's to say my... love and respect.
We're not dealing, you mean, with a frivolous coquette or a bored wife.
Precisely. A person like Mademoiselle de Volanges must be treated with the utmost consideration. And my own position has certain weaknesses of which I'm only too bitterly aware. Her great fortune, for example, compared to my own precarious...
Naturally, there would be no excuse for trying to maneuver her into such a pass that she should be forced to marry you. That would be quite wrong.
You do understand how I feel.
Of course he does. What did I tell you?
You see, I'm quite happy with things as they are, as long as she consents to see me, to continue with the music lessons.
Ah, the music lessons. In any case, I have absolutely no wish to press my attention.
No,
you.
Please.
But do rest assured that I am honored to be at your disposal.
The honor, monsieur, is entirely mine. And any contact with you would be a privilege. Perhaps you would care
I'm
to...
sorry to interrupt you, Chevalier, but I'm afraid you must leave. Madame de Volanges has just been announced. You see now why I was concerned at your late arrival.
Maybe this would be a good opportunity for me to pay my respects and hope...
I really think at this juncture, Monsieur Johnson, it would be prudent for you not to be found here. That is, if you want me to be of any effective assistance in the future.
Of course, whatever you think fit.
Goodbye, Chevalier. My man will show you to a side exit.
Madame.
I have to go to Versailles tomorrow. I don't know if you'd care to accompany me.
I'd like that very much.
Good. I'll send a carriage for you at 9. So, this is the scene you have planned for me.
If you'd care to go behind the screen?
I think you might have consulted me before offering my services as general factotum to that exasperating boy. I don't find lovers' complaints remotely entertaining outside of the opera.
I was sure if anyone could help him.
Help? He doesn't need help. He needs hindrances. If he has to climb over enough of them, he might inadvertently fall on top of her.
I'll see what I can do. Now, Vicomte, the screen.
Are you sure I shouldn't confront Volanges? Give her some evidence for those rude letters?
Quick. You know that it was urgent. My dear. It's days now. I haven't been able to think about anything else. I couldn't decide what to do for the best. Finally, I saw there was no escaping the fact. It was my plain duty to tell you. Please, sit down.
Thank you.
As you know, in recent weeks, Sophia has been kind enough to accept my friendship and, I believe, bestow on me her own.
Yes, of course. She's devoted to you.
This is what makes this duty doubly difficult to perform.
This has something to do with Sophia.
I may be wrong. I pray heaven I am.
Go on.
I have reason to believe that a... How can I describe it? A... dangerous liaison has sprung up between your daughter and the Chevalier Danceny.
No, that's completely absurd. Cecile is still a child. She understands nothing of these things. And Danceny is an entirely respectable young man.
If you were to be right, no one would be happier than I.
Naturally, they've never been together unchaperoned, generally by me and often by you.
Precisely. That's when I first formed the impression that something was passing between them. The way they looked at each other.
I'm sure it's merely their feeling for the music.
Perhaps so. But there was one other thing. Tell me, does Cecile have a great many correspondents?
She writes, I suppose, an average number of letters. Relatives, friends from the convent. Why?
I went into her room at the beginning of the week. I simply knocked and entered without waiting for a reply. And she was stuffing a letter into the left-hand drawer of her bureau, in which, I couldn't help noticing, there seemed to be a large number of similar letters. I'm most grateful to you. I'll see myself out.
I hope you don't think me interfering.
Not at all.
And I do hope if, God forbid, you do discover anything compromising, you won't tell Cecile it was I who was responsible. I would hate to forfeit her trust. And if there is to be a period of difficulty, I would like to think my advice might be of some use to her.
Of course.
Would you think it impertinent if I were to make another suggestion?
No.
No? If my recollection is correct, I overheard you saying to the Vicomte de Valmont that his aunt had invited you to stay at her chateau.
She has, yes, repeatedly.
Spell in the country might be the very thing until all this blows over.
Isn't the Vicomte staying there at the moment?
I understand he's returned to Paris. I expect I've imagined the whole thing, and tomorrow we'll be able to laugh at my stupidity. If so, I hope you'll be able to forgive me.
My dear, I shall always be more than grateful for your concern.
So, you understand I've returned to Paris.
You asked for hindrances.
You are a genuinely wicked woman.
And you wanted a chance to make my cousin suffer?
I can't resist you.
I've made it easy for you.
Back to Auntie, eh?
Back to Auntie. Well, you can also pursue that other matter. You have some evidence to procure, have you not?
Don't you think it would be a generous gesture? Show proper confidence in my abilities, I mean, to take that evidence for granted.
I need it in writing, Vicomte. And now you must leave me.
Must I? Why?
Because I'm hungry.
Yes, I've quite an appetite myself.
Then go home and eat.
Madame.
In writing.
A week later, after lunch, the salon in Madame de Roisemont's chateau. Madame de Tourvel is stretched out on the chaise lawn. Ashen. Cecile sits in the window working at her tapestry. Madame de Roisemont and Madame de Volange sit at the card table. Only Valmont is on his feet, moving around the room, his eye roving from Madame de Tourvel to Cecile and back again.
Oh, you will be pleased to hear, my dear, that Armand is on his feet again and back at work.
Who?
Monsieur Armand. You remember whose family you helped so generously.
Oh, yes.
We've been keeping an eye on things while you've been away. I must say he never ceases to sing your praises. When my nephew was last staying here, my dear, we discovered quite by chance that he'd been down
to
the village.
Are you feeling all right, madame? I'm sorry to interrupt you, Aunt. It seemed to me all of a sudden that Madame de Tourvel didn't look at all well.
No, I'm very right. You do look dreadfully pale, my dear.
I'm all right.
Or perhaps you need some air. Do you feel constricted in any way?
No, really.
I feel sure Madame de Valange is right, as usual. A turn around the grounds, perhaps.
Yes, yes, a little walk in the garden. It's not too cool, I think.
Well, perhaps.
Come along, my dear. We'll all accompany you.
I'll be quite happy on my own.
You'll have to excuse me, ladies, but I think you're right to insist on chaperoning, madame.
Oh, fresh air will do you the world of good.
You were somewhat heavy.
Yes. I didn't mean that to be the cause. So now just
come back for your shawl, Cecile. Come back for your shawl.
Monsieur?
I don't want to arouse suspicion, mademoiselle, so I must be brief, and I must ask you to pay close attention to what I say. This letter is from our friend, the Chevalier Danceny.
Monsieur, Maman has taken away my paper and pens.
Right, now, listen carefully. There are two large cupboards in the antechamber next to your room. In the left-hand cupboard, you'll find a supply of paper, pens, and ink.
Oh, thank you.
I suggest you return the Chevalier's letters to me when you've read them for safekeeping.
Must I?
It would be wise. Now, this key resembles the key to your bedroom, which I happen to know is kept in your mother's room on the mantelpiece, tied with a blue ribbon. Take it, attach the blue ribbon to it, and put it in the place of your bedroom key, which you will then bring to me. I'll be able to get a copy cut within 2 hours. I'll return you the original, and you can put it back in your mother's room. Then I'll be able to collect your letters and deliver Danceny's without any complications.
Monsieur.
Oh, and on the shelf below the writing paper, you'll find a feather and a small bottle of oil so that you can oil the lock and hinges on your bedroom door.
Are you sure, monsieur? I'm not sure it would be right.
How else are we going to manage this? Your mother never lets you out of her sight. You really must trust me, my dear.
Well...
Now, I suggest you rejoin your mamma and the others before they send out a search party.
Yes, monsieur. Thank you, monsieur.
My pleasure.
It's early evening now, and Madame de Tourvel enters the room to find Valmont reading a book. She freezes as soon as she sees him.
I trust you're feeling a little better, madame.
If I had felt ill, monsieur, it would not be difficult to guess who was responsible.
You can't mean me, do you?
You promised to leave here.
And I did.
And how can you be insensitive enough to return, uninvited and without warning?
I find myself obliged to attend to some urgent business in the area, in which, moreover, my aunt is crucially involved.
I only hope it can be dealt with promptly.
Why are you so angry with me?
I'm not angry. Although, since you gave me a solemn undertaking not to offend me when you wrote... And then, in your very first letter, spoke of nothing but the disorders of love. I'm certainly entitled to be.
I was away almost 3 weeks and wrote to you only 3 times. And since I was quite unable to think of anything but you, some might say I showed heroic restraint.
Not insofar as you persisted in writing about your love, despite my pleas for you not to do so.
It's true. I couldn't find the strength to obey you.
You claim to think there's some connection between what you call love... and happiness. I can't believe that there is.
In these circumstances, I agree. When the love is unrequited.
As it must be. You know it's impossible for me to reciprocate your feelings. And even if I did, it could only cause me suffering without making you any the happier.
But what else could I have written to you about other than my love? What else is there? I believe I've done everything you've asked of me.
You've done nothing of the sort.
I left here when you wanted me to.
And you came back. I've offered you my friendship, monsieur. It's the only thing I can give you. Why can't you accept it?
I could pretend to, but that would be dishonest.
You're not answering my question.
The man I used to be would have been content with friendship and set about trying to turn it to his advantage. But I have changed now, and I can't conceal from you that I love you tenderly, passionately, and above all, respectfully. So how am I to demote myself to the tepid position of friend? In any case, you're no longer even pretending to show friendship.
What do you mean?
You're trying to leave. Is that friendly?
You can hardly expect me to stay here and listen to the expression of sentiments you know very well I can only find insulting.
I think you're misunderstanding me. I know you can bestow on me nothing more than your friendship, for which, by the way, I'm profoundly grateful. In the same way, I can feel nothing less for you than love. We both know this is the true position. Can't we simply acknowledge it? I don't see why recognition of the truth should lose me your friendship. Openness and honesty scarcely deserve to be punished. Don't you agree?
You are adept, monsieur, at framing questions which preclude the answer no. Your honesty or otherwise is not at issue. The point is, surely, that I was weak enough to be persuaded to grant you a favour you should never have obtained. And furthermore, I did this under certain conditions, not a single one of which you have observed. Naturally, I feel you've exploited my good faith.
What can I say to reassure you? How can you be afraid of me when, because I love you, your happiness is far more important to me than my own? You've made me a better person. You mustn't now undo your handiwork. And now, good evening.
Monsieur? Nothing.
A fortnight later, the middle of the night, Cecile's bedroom in the chateau. She is fast asleep. There's the sound of a key in the lock, and Valmont lets himself quietly into the room. He's wearing a dressing gown and carrying a dark lantern. He crosses to the bed and stands for a moment contemplating the still sleeping Cecile. He puts the lantern down carefully and, after some thought, leans forward and very gently eases back the covers. Cecile stirs but doesn't wake. Valmont puts a hand across her mouth. Her eyes open, wide and staring.
Nothing to worry about.
Has he brought a letter?
No. Oh, no.
Then what?
He leans over to kiss her. There's a brief, fierce struggle in which Cecile successfully defends herself from the kiss, but is taken entirely by surprise when Valmont plunges a hand up inside her nightdress.
No. You mustn't summon help. What are you going to tell your mother when she arrives? How will you explain the fact that I have your key? If I tell her I'm here at your invitation, I have a feeling she'll believe me.
What do you want?
Well, I don't know. What do you think?
No. Please don't. Please.
All right. I just want you to give me a kiss.
A kiss?
That's all.
And then we'll go.
Then I'll go.
On this?
Whatever you say.
All right. Right.
Very nice.
No, I mean, will you go now?
Oh, I don't think so.
But you've promised.
I promised to go when you gave me a kiss. You didn't give me a kiss. I gave you a kiss. Not the same thing at all.
And if I give you a kiss?
That's what I said.
You really promise?
Let's just get ourselves more comfortable, shall we?
Do you? Please don't do that.
I'll take it away after the kiss.
Promise?
Yes, yes.
Swear?
I swear. Now, put your arms around me. See, I told you I'd take my hand away.
The following day, in the garden of Madame de Rosemont's chateau, Cecile approaches, arm in arm with Madame de Merteuil, who seems to be supporting her.
My dear, I really can't help you unless you tell me what's troubling you.
You'll be angry with me.
Are you sure you don't want me to be angry with you? Come along.
I don't know how to speak the words.
Perhaps I am beginning to get angry.
Last night?
Yes.
So that we could exchange letters to and from Domsigny without arousing suspicion, I gave Monsieur de Valmont the key to my bedroom.
Yes.
And last night he used it. I thought he'd just come to bring me a letter, but he hadn't. And by the time I realized what he had come for, well, it was too late to stop him.
You mean to tell me you're upset because Mr. de Valmont has taught you something you've undoubtedly been dying to learn?
What?
Am I to understand that what generally brings a girl to her senses has deprived you of yours?
I thought you'd be horrified.
Tell me. You resisted him, did you?
Of course I did. As much as I could.
But he forced you.
It wasn't that exactly, but I found it almost impossible to defend myself.
Why was that? Did he tie you up?
No, no. But he has a way of putting things. You just can't think of an answer.
Not even no?
I kept saying no all the time, but somehow that wasn't what I was doing. And in the end...
Yes?
I told him he could come back again tonight. I'm so ashamed.
You really want my advice?
Please.
Allow Monsieur de Valmont to continue your instruction. Convince your mother you have forgotten Danceny, and raise no objection to the marriage.
With Monsieur de Vercourt?
When it comes to marriage, one man is as good as the next. And even the least accommodating is less trouble than a mother.
But what about Danceny?
He seems patient enough, and once you're married, you should be able to see him without undue difficulty.
I thought you once said to me, I'm sure you did, one evening at the opera, that once I was married, I would have to be faithful to my husband.
Your mind must have been wandering. You must have been listening to the opera.
So, are you saying I'm going to have to do that with three different men?
I'm saying, you stupid little girl, that provided you take a few elementary precautions, you can do it or not with as many men as you like, as often as you like, in as many different ways as you like. Our sex has few enough advantages. You may as well make the most of those you have. Now, here comes your mama. So remember what I've said. And above all, no more snivelling.
Yes, madame.
How are you feeling now, my dear?
Oh, much better, thank you, Maman.
Oh, you look so tired. I think you should go to bed.
No, really.
I think you should do as your mother suggests. We can arrange for something to be brought to your room. I'm sure it would do you good.
Well, perhaps you're right, madame.
I'll come up and see you later on, Cecile.
Thank you, Maman.
You have such a very good influence on her, my dear.
I like to think...
If you'll excuse me, monsieur, I must go and make arrangements for some supper to be taken up to my daughter.
Oh, is she indisposed?
For the moment.
Well, the young have such miraculous powers of recuperation. I'm sure she'll soon be back in the saddle. Tell her I hope so, at least.
Thank you, monsieur.
You see, she can hardly bear to speak two words to me.
But I gather you've had your revenge. Well done.
So you know.
The little one could hardly wait to tell me.
A favourable report, I trust?
On the contrary, Vicomte. If I hadn't spoken to her sharply, I think on your next visit you'd have found her door bolted as well as locked.
Oh, it surprised me. I was malicious enough to use no more strength than could easily be resisted.
Still, for some reason, she seems to think it was rather an underhand approach.
I'd been postponing it, to tell you the truth. But when I heard you were expected today, I wanted to be able to afford you some amusement, at least.
It's just as well I did decide to look in, because as it turns out, your initiative came within an ace of sabotaging our whole plan.
What do you mean?
Madame de Valange was so concerned about Cecile's appearance this morning, she resolved to allow her to marry Danceny after all.
No.
I think I've been able to talk her out of it. But the fact remains, you almost lost us our revenge on Gercourt.
I could hardly be expected to anticipate this sudden access of compassion. After all, to my knowledge, Mother Valange has never shown signs of it before.
I'm beginning to have my doubts about you, Vicomte. Do you really deserve your reputation? You see, the real reason I consented to spend a night at this lugubrious address was that I was hoping to be shown some tear-stained bit of paper.
Ah.
But I can only assume from what you've been saying that no such document exists.
No.
Probably just as well, no doubt you're exhausted after last night's exertions.
I think you know me better than that.
Well, I wonder. Can you account for this extraordinary deliberateness?
It's true that she's resisted me for more than 2 months now, and that's very nearly a record, but I really don't want to hurry things. We go for a walk together almost every day, a little further every time down the path that has no turning. She's accepted my love. I've accepted her friendship. We're both aware how little there is to choose between them. Her eyes are closing. Every step she tries to take away from the inevitable conclusion brings her a little nearer to it. Hopes and fears, passions and suspense. Even if you're in the theater, what more could you ask?
An audience?
But you... You, my audience. And when Gercourt is married and Madame de Tourvel eventually collapses, we shall tell everyone, shall we not? And the story will spread much faster than the plot of the latest play. And I've no doubt it will be much better received.
I hope you're right, Vicomte. I wish I could share your confidence.
I'm only sorry our agreement does not relate to the task you set me rather than the task I set myself.
I am grateful, of course, but that would have been almost insultingly simple. One does not applaud the tenor for clearing his throat.
Oh, you're right. How could one possibly compare them?
Oh, I'm so delighted you could manage to visit us, my dear, even if only for such a short time.
Madame?
Monsieur?
I wish I could stay longer, Madame, but my husband's estate...
Do you know... I was thinking yesterday, it's more than 5 years since you were last here with your dear husband. Oh, such a kind and such a vigorous man. Who could have imagined? Oh, well.
Yes, madame, there's no denying that life is frighteningly unpredictable.
Les Liaisons Dangereuses by Christopher Hampton. Kieran Hines played Valmont, Lindsay Duncan, Madame de Merteuil, and Emma Fielding, Madame de Tourvel. Adam Godley was the Chevalier Danceny, Alison Pettit, Cécile, Joanna David, Madame de Volange, Elizabeth Spriggs, Madame de Rosemonde, Sarah Jane Holm, Emily, and Charles Simpson Azoulon. The narrator was John Moffat, and the music was composed by Ilona Sakach. Technical presentation was by Simon Moorcroft, and the production assistant was Miriam Soupy. Les Liaisons Dangereuses was directed for BBC Radio by Gordon House.